on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in Southwest Florida. Nice day. It were like the last few weeks of the year where we're going to have like low humidity. So it's a big deal for us. Both Sarah and I are outside today. And this is, of course, Juice Fresh Talk. And I am your co-host, Dr. Cindy Banier.
And I am your other co-host, Sarah Wilson. And again, today we're missing Chantal Rhodes, but we send her our love as she does to all of you as well. She has sent messages of love to share and also a couple topic ideas. So she's still with us even when she's not with us.
There's
no breaking this trio. This
That's good. And here, just in case if you're wondering, because like I'm going to say, Sarah, like your background is so beautiful. It looks like it could be one of those like, you know, fake backgrounds, but we can tell that it's not fake because the birds are like for real flying behind you.
Yes, this is, I'm very, very blessed to live on a farm here in North Fort Myers and beautiful natural scenery that I have to pinch myself when I look at it, that this is where I get to live.
Yeah.
And I am not born in Florida, but I consider myself a Florida girl and I love our Florida nature and scenery. So this is like pure paradise every day.
Yeah,
and it's not the palm trees that everybody, it's so funny. Everybody that thinks of Florida when you don't live here, and even myself before I moved to Florida, it's like, oh, palm trees and beaches. When I say I live on a farm to like clients that come into the tattoo shop, they're like, what? Like Florida is like one of the biggest agricultural producers in the country. Like,
right.
Yes, farms, yes. Things other than palm trees and sandy beaches. So
yeah. It's actually more like the scenery we see behind you, which is like the scrub grass and the palmetto, the saw palmettos and the moss, the Spanish moss hanging down. Like that's Florida.
That's Florida. And I love it. And it's heating up. As you said, we're still low on humidity, which is great, but it is warming up. So how long we'll be able to tolerate these outdoor recordings, I'm not sure. I do love the heat, but
it's when you're schwitzing in the light, it's hard. Well, yeah. I'm also outdoor today. I'm actually, so this is my house. I got a beautiful couple of banyan trees here. Yeah, I live in the city. Yeah, it's very cool. Very lucky to have that. I have like a tiny cottage on like a tiny plot of land, but I have two giant banyan trees and my yard. So it's very cool. I send the kids to go climb up it when they're bothering me. I'm like, go climb the tree.
Yeah, that's like a wonderland for a child, that banyan behind you. And on the farm, we will have our visitors coming through. This is my cat. So yeah, I love banyan trees. So I'm a little jealous of that. What do you got on? Let me see.
I say that says think green, vote blue. So I'm repping my environmental causes today. Yeah. And so I've been a longtime environmental activist here in Florida, actually going kind of all the way back to my early days of activism when I just moved here 2008 and wanted to be able to walk my kids who were itty bitty babies at the time, walk them around town. And I realized like, oh, our sidewalks are terrible and our roads are dangerous. So I got involved in that world, bicycle and pedestrian safety advocacy, and that has a lot of overlap with environmental stuff because of the land use planning that the county commissions and the city councils do. So I got involved in it there and then have made it a major theme of everything that I've done going into my political career and beyond. And I am also happy to announce to folks that I am currently the interim executive director of the Calusa Nature Center and Planetarium.
Yes.
Great is like a very important historic piece of land here in Southwest Florida. It's the largest green space in the city of Fort Myers. It's very important for our water management. So like the runoff stuff and then cleaning the water that goes into the aquifer that like we drink in the city as well. So very happy to be part of that. They're part of a network of folks that take in rescued creatures, so like invasive animals or native animals that are injured and they live on the property with us if they can't be released back into the wild. So it's a great opportunity for people to come, like hit the trails. And my job is to help take the organization to the next level. It's been around since the 70s and we're looking to get some big funding. So if you're interested in becoming, a funder, for like something super important to our ecosystem, then absolutely hit us up and I will put those dollars to work for all of us here in Southwest Florida.
That's awesome, Cindy. Congratulations. I'm excited for them and for all of us in Fort Myers that you're in that position, because I know you will do it well. So
thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Gotta love our environment. So
Yes, we do.
Because without it, we're done. We're toast.
I mean, that's kind of priority.
Yeah, it is. But it's hard. I get it. So like, you know, as somebody who's been very passionate about the environment, I understand how sometimes it can fall to the wayside because so many of our rights and other things have been under attack, especially here in the state of Florida, right? You know, we've seen rollback of reproductive freedoms, right? So that's been top of mind for folks. We have major social justice issues that have been going on. You know, everything from, you know, erasure of trans people to erasure of actual Black history and slavery in our school curriculums.
And a twisting of that history, a rewriting of that history. So yes, yeah.
Yeah, so people are really fighting for their mere existence sometimes. So I think it's like the environment, unfortunately, gets kind of to the side, but it's like the base of us. So I always like try to hold on bringing that up when, you know, when we can, and keeping the beat going for that.
Well, and what a lot of people I don't think realize is how ingrained environmental issues are into every other form of social justice, right? Like racial justice.
Yep.
There's a huge part of that environmental piece when it comes to different areas that are used for dumping and filling and toxic waste. And those are typically redlined, predominantly Black neighborhoods and communities. Yep. So environmental justice and racial justice are so intrinsically linked. They have been linked by our systems. So I think we have to consider that when we consider these other issues. So I don't speak about it as much. Unless I'm talking about things like that when I'm talking racial injustice, but I do think it needs to be something, because that is health concerns. Like, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, no, it's health concerns, but it's also like longevity, right? Like you're talking about one of the reasons why there's major health discrepancies between Black and Brown and white communities is because of the environmental justice issues, right? I mean, you're talking sometimes 10 years or more difference in life expectancies between Black communities and white communities, and it's all linked to air pollution and ground and water pollution.
Right. And even there are areas too where it's even poor, like impoverished white communities as well, but to a greater extent, definitely Black and Brown communities. And even here in Florida, there's an area in Orlando, the Paramore area, that is boxed in by highways. And there has been major health concerns there. And, you know, even at FGCU, which I'm a student there and you're a professor there, we have to do the university colloquium class. Regardless of major, everyone has to take this course, and it's really about the Florida ecosystems and environment and getting us more grounded in what's around us environmentally. And we read some literature about Paramore, which was wild to me because I'm from Central Florida. I grew up 40 minutes from Orlando. So, and I worked in Orlando, so I know that area well, and I didn't even realize, I mean, I realized that that area was redlined and boxed in, but I did not realize the health concerns that were coming out of there. And, you know, the pre-lawyer in me is like, class action lawsuit. Like, there, you know, that's how you have to get justice in some of these. And money is a great motivator, especially for our government. So I think sometimes lawsuits are the way to go, especially when you can get big money.
So, but let's talk about that, Miss Pre, almost a lawyer, okay? Because
I still got a ways to go, but
you got it. You're almost there. You're just stepping in the right direction. But here's the other thing. So, like, you know, people, we have to fight for our rights on all levels, frankly, right? Because we have to fight on the individual level, you know, and that's where lawyers a lot of times will come in, and lawyers can do the class action lawsuits too. But we also need people who are fighting in the city council, the county commission, and in our state legislature, okay? Because we cannot have individual justice if we have laws on the books that are preventing it. And let me give you an example of this. And a lot of people don't know about, I don't know if we talked about it here, but there was a huge air pollution leak here in Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. You may have never heard about it, right? It was called ethylene oxide. It was right over here in Fort Myers, and it was a big deal. And it caused a lot of problems in this area over by Metro Parkway. My kids were exposed to it. Okay. The EPA, the exposure was so high. It's carcinogenic, all this kind of stuff. The EPA said it was so high that they sent in and did a town hall meeting, said, oh, by the way, I just want to let you know, like, there's a super carcinogenic thing that's been, like, you know, polluting your area for more than 10 years. And, like, we legally have to let you know.
Right.
But we're going to try to fix it. Right. And so I actually tried to sue because my daughter had a rare blood disease that came out of nowhere that seemed very much related to, like, what this mysterious chemical was doing to people, which is destroying their hemoglobin. Anyway, I tried to sue. I tried to get a class action lawsuit with other people who were, like, affected or potentially affected. And even on the individual level, the lawyer told me, look, we can't take this because the law in the state of Florida says that you either need to have direct links and there's no parameters in there for you to sue collectively for future damage or anything like that. Right. So basically, the legal system in the state of Florida gives these polluters a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Gives them a pass. And that's why we need both people fighting on the legal side, but then we also need legislators in there, because right now the system is set up to protect those corporate entities no matter what they do to our environment.
Right. And that's why, you know, it's almost like the chicken and the egg scenario. So sometimes you need lawsuits to encourage legislation. And then sometimes, you know what I mean? So it kind of goes back and forth, but definitely, definitely, definitely on these issues. That's why I think you and I stress all the time, and Chantel too, you have to confront these on all fronts, like every available avenue that you can take to address these issues, you have to take, because not one will do it. They all kind of have to work in cohesion. So absolutely, legislation. And that reminds me, do you want to talk about the bill going through the Florida legislature right now about air pollution? And what's going on? Have you heard about that? What's going on?
Yeah, tell me a little bit more. I've been following different environmental bills.
Yeah.
But one specifically about the air pollution, it's not top of mind, which is hilarious to me, actually.
I want to give the right number and the right information.
And while you're looking that up, I just want to let everybody know, because I just noticed my battery is quite low. So if we just suddenly go blank, I'm sorry, I'm outside and I don't have a plug. So. Okay. Fingers crossed we make it through the show, guys.
We're going to try. Okay, let's see. This is House Bill 1645, Senate Bill 1624. This bill would allow the construction of above-ground liquid natural gas facilities, which have been linked to gas leaks, explosions, and destruction. This bill will also walk back Florida's commitment to reducing air pollution. So one of those protections that we have had, which is still haphazard, but one of these protections that we have had is now being rolled back and will likely progress all the way through and pass in the Florida legislature, because they all are right now. The only one we got lucky on was the monument bill. But everything
and wasn't that because, by the way, like, it came out in the discussion that it was, like, basically like, yeah, this is to uphold white supremacy.
Yes. And all hell broke loose. Excuse my language. So that's the only reason why we were able to get rid of that. But because, like you said, they said the quiet thing out loud. So we really have to be, like we keep saying, diligent on all fronts and really paying attention. And part of that conversation as of recently, last night there was a forum, Ward 2 for City Council Ward 2, which is open. Johnny Streets is retiring. So that's going to be an open seat. And there was a forum last night at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. And I wasn't able to attend, but my best friend attended, and she said that there was a lot of conversation, especially stressed by Pastor Parker, youth engagement and getting the youth involved, because we can't just leave it to them. We are, as their elders, some would say, we hold some responsibility for drawing them into the fold. I believe that to be true. And we also have responsibility in discouraging them, or no, not responsibility, but we also should take responsibility for discouraging them sometimes, because I know I was very, very politically active at a young age, or engaged, and it was discouraged a lot of the time. And not by my parents, but like at school and like by teachers that said, we can't talk about this in class. And I'm 17 years old thinking, I'm voting soon. What do you mean we can't talk about this in class? So I think as adults and people bringing the youth up, we do have a responsibility to draw them in and to be careful not to send them packing when it comes to politics. And my friend said, well, what are some good ways that we can engage the youth? And I know this is a topic of conversation a lot. And Orlando, going back to my hometown area, just had a huge music festival yesterday called Mad Soul. And Anna Eskamani was there. AOC was there.
Maxwell Frost,
but the Montana representative, who is like the first and only trans
climber, Charlotte Clymer. No, I can't remember that person's name.
Why am I drawing a blank? But anyway, all of these people who are like so inspirational right now in the political arena, because sometimes we're like, dun, dun, dun. Like there's little to be excited or inspired about, right?
Right.
But all of these like younger, energetic political and elected officials were out and did this whole music festival. They registered 1,000 voters in one day.
Okay.
So my answer is that's how we get the youth engaged. First of all, we relate to them. We talk to them in ways that they understand. But more importantly, rather than talking, I think it's time to start listening to the youth. Mm-hmm. Because thinking back to when I was young, all I wanted to do was be heard. You know, you hold all your life quiet, you listen to your elders, or at least in my household, it was very much speak when spoken to, you know, that kind of very strict. Children don't have a place for an opinion. So coming up like that, I think it's really important that we take the time to say, hey, this is the world that you're coming into and you're going to be responsible for, and cleaning up a lot of our messes. So let's hear what you have to say, rather than just going into these situations where we're just speaking at them, telling them how it should be done, what they should be doing. I think the answer is listening. And that sounds simple, but Cindy, what do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, it's listening, but it's engaging them. I can relate to my experience as a professor, right? Like I do this dialogue with young people. I've done it for over a decade, trying to get them educated on an issue too. It's like, hey, here's the different components of it. Here's like the right, here's the left, here's the spectrum. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the spectrum of the rhetoric. And then I'm always like, here's the spectrum of like the activity. So like usually there's rhetoric kind of on the fringes, but not as much activity, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I always tell them like, hey, you may hear the other side criticize that, but usually the activity is kind of somewhere in here, right? Right. And I said, listen, like, let's talk about the issues. What do you know? Where did you come from? And then like, figure out what you think, because there's a lot of times that there are issues that either we haven't been introduced to as, you know, the young folks, or they never thought about it and they never really had a lot of time or space to kind of, you know, talk it out essentially. So I give them that space in the class, and then we have an open dialogue where people are like, here's the pro side and here's the con side. This is what people who aren't sure think. And we just kind of, we listen. That's the whole point, is like, you listen to the other person. You're not necessarily trying to knock down their argument. It's listening. And it's been so powerful, I'll tell you, just to allow the space and frankly, allow the space for emergent thoughts on it.
Right.
Because I think that's what's kind of scary about politics right now, is like, it feels like if you step one step on the wrong side of an issue, and this is kind of like across the board, I'll throw my progressive friends under the bus on this, right?
Definitely.
If you step one step on the wrong side, everybody's going to attack you. So you may think that you're, you know, a progressive person, but if you say the wrong thing, then they're going to be like, oh, we're coming after you, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of stifles the dialogue and the thought of a lot of young folks. They may want to get involved, but they don't know everything about it, because they're just kind of on the beginning of their journey as when the Japanese, we say like shokaijin, like you're a person of the world, right? Like when you become an adult, you become a person of the world. You're not like a person of the home of your parents' home anymore, right? And I actually love kind of being part of that process with the young people, because I help to set them up, be like, no, it's okay. I would tell them like, it's okay to not know. It's okay to not have an opinion. I said, it's okay to not think that every issue is important, right? Like, there are things, you know, and we talk about this too, like, you know, like today I'm kind of like, I'm feeling like I want to talk about the environment, because that's kind of like top of mind for me today, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are other issues, like, you know, that we spent the last couple episodes talking about the Christopher Jordan shooting, right? So we're talking about police brutality and justice and stuff like that. So that was top of mind, right? And just letting folks know that it's there's space to have all these different thoughts, and you can definitely get involved in one thing and leave the other issues to other folks, right? Right. Like, I think it feels daunting sometimes for these young folks. And I know that that's how they feel because they tell me, I guess I'm listening, right?
Right. Right. And that they're provided a path if they do want to get engaged and if they do want to get involved, and that they're able to create a path too. Like, we have to allow that freedom and listen to these ideas, because sometimes, I mean, I've said this before too, I'm around young people so much being a college student. And right. I am often just shocked by things that as adults, we overcomplicate, and they'll just give this simple answer. And it's like, wow, who knew it could be that simple? Because they're not like convoluted with all of this, like really skepticism that we kind of grow into. And so I think we need to start listening more, but I also think that we need to provide better spaces to give information, to give resources, to engage and get them involved, to bring them along. And that's why I brought up the music festival, because for me, the reason why I got involved so young and why I started, you know, really wanting to be engaged in politics at a very, very young age is because I loved music. My dad and both of my parents really introduced us to music young. And my dad used to stress to me how important words were. So in the Bible, he was a preacher, so words were so meaningful to him. And so when I would listen to music, he would talk about lyrics and he would kind of break it down for me. So as soon as I like developed this love for music, that's what I would do with lyrics. I would break them down and synthesize them and then go research whatever I heard. And so that's what introduced me to social justice issues, like at 10 years old. So why aren't we trying these methods? Because that's what, like, something that can entertain a child or move their mind. I think there are ways that we can do that, but we have to be more creative and we don't have to fit into this like perfect little box. Cause I think a lot of people want to make politics, and politics are serious. Like, policy is serious. But we can have fun while doing it. We can have fun while engaging people in it. So I think that music festivals, poetry slams, anything we can do to get people excited about making a difference and get them excited about participating, we need to try that.
Yeah, I agree. And so that actually like started me to think about a big event that we had here in Southwest Florida yesterday, which was Pride Cape Coral. Oh, and it was a lovely event, as it always is. Like, big shout out to the coordinators there. And it was a little interesting, like trying to see how this show was going to go, because the way they usually do it is they have like a vendor area, some tents and stuff, mm-hmm. and then they have a parade, and then they usually have a show with it. And of course, we've heard about the drag bands and things like that in the state of Florida. Now, I believe what has happened is that the drag band currently has a it is not being enforced because of legal action around it. So this passed in the legislature in 2023, and it's now got to stay essentially as it's going up the ranks. So the whole concept that drag can't be seen by people under the 18 and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So, but everybody's walking a line on this, right? But the producers of the show yesterday at Cape Pride, they had a lovely set of drag performers in the kind of classic sense of like the drag as, you know, doing music and dancing and costuming. And they didn't have a lot of overtly sexual stuff, which kind of, you know, helps for the crowd and the folks to get along with that, as opposed to like the private adult shows that, you know, that you see at the drag bars on the evenings and stuff like that. But it was a lot of fun and a lot of joy. There was a handful of counter protesters yesterday, as there always are. There's like one particular church group who I don't even know. They won't actually identify themselves because they're cowards. But they come up with these disgusting signs and they're trying to antagonize people. It's the same guy that had been on the FGCU campus forever. I saw him there. I've gone like literally toe to toe with most of these morons. So, but the thing that was so funny, this is like almost like a little proud mama moment for me, is my son out of nowhere decided he was going to be an activist yesterday. Like, he came with me, like my daughter had her friends and my youngest was kind of with me. And then my son saw those guys with the signs being mean and horrible to everybody. And then he got out there, he got initiated into the Rainbow Brigade. So they gave him the rainbow umbrella, which is something that folks do in these spaces to like basically cover the horrible messages on these signs and basically distract from these counter protesters who will shout at that and telling people they're going to hell and stuff like that. So my son decided he was going to do that, jumped right in, spent the entire afternoon like going and bird dogging these counter protesters, and he loved it. He said it was like the best day of his life and that he was so invigorated. He's like, God, I love it. And I'm like, see, maybe that's what fighting for justice does. Like, it gives you this energy. He's like, I love it. I can't, like, I'm so excited. It felt so good to fight against these bullies. I'm like, that's right. These guys are bullies. And like, we're fighting back against the bullies. And sometimes you need people who are strong like you to fight against the bullies so that they're not hurting other people. And by the way, my son is 11. So like, and he just did this, I was like, hey, you want to go like, look at the vendors or whatever. And like, he jumped right into the activist stuff. I was like, all right, son, good job.
Nice. Well, and I think what he was feeling is empowered. Like when you use your voice and you realize that you're using it to help someone or yourself, I mean, that's an empowering feeling to do. So I'm happy for him for experiencing that moment and for sticking up for, you know, against the bullies.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Sad too, because I didn't go to Pride yesterday. This week has been.
Here he is, by the way. We were just talking about how you were going against the bullies yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
No problem,
he says.
He's like, I got this. I'm an activist now. I got it.
Yes, full-blown activist.
But I remember I didn't go yesterday. This week has been like midterm papers due. I finally got my law school applications all turned in, finally. And also I had a virus I was fighting. So I did not do much of anything this week. But I do remember a time when you could go to Pride in Fort Myers and there was not protesters, which is a little bit wild considering like we went years having Pride in Fort Myers without a single protester showing up. So that goes to show you what rhetoric and propaganda can do, because these same people did not believe the way, you know, they still didn't think that being gay was okay or being trans was okay, but they didn't find it necessary to go out and protest about it or to be hateful about it. And that's the biggest thing for me, is just like the hatefulness, because I catch flack from this, and I think even a little from you sometimes, Cindy, because I'm a true believer that we all have a right to our beliefs, our opinions, however we want to feel. I have no issue with people believing that being gay is a sin according to their religion. I don't have an issue with that. If that's your belief, fine. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is you attempting to deny me of equal rights in the country that I live in. What I'm not okay with is you spewing hate at me and the people that I love. So you let me live in my belief, and I will let you live in your belief with dignity, honor, and respect. Like, because
I don't think I would give you flack for that.
You know, and maybe I've worded it differently in the past, and maybe you didn't. Maybe it was somebody else. But I feel like sometimes people think that that's not pro-gay enough. I've heard people say, no, being wrong. Like, I've been called, in the philosophy world, moral relativist.
Oh, okay, like, okay.
You know, where morals are relative to how you believe. And to some, when it comes to certain things, I think that that is true, as long as you're not harming anyone. There are too many religions in this world, too many beliefs that people believe in wholeheartedly that I cannot believe, you know, that everyone is entitled to their own beliefs, in my opinion, and I respect that. And I don't need, but I think that comes with a certain level of self-love. I think that that is important, especially within the LGBTQ plus community that I'm a member of. That there has to be a certain level of self-love where you no longer require the acceptance of others. Mm. Like, I don't need these other people to accept me, my lifestyle, and who I love. What I do need and what I do demand is respect and equal rights.
As so I was saying,
difference.
That goes back to the freedom component, right? Which I'm very much in the same camp as you on this, I think. So maybe we were tiffing about something else.
We didn't agree at all. I'm sorry for being so.
No, it's okay. Listen, we don't have to agree on everything. And we all said that from the very beginning of Juice. It's right. Like, we're talking about stuff that's tough and it's going to be, we're not trying to fall into the regular boxes when we have these conversations. So like, let's let everybody in the audience know that too. Like, but it's also an opportunity for us to clarify what we believe. Right. And absolutely. I'm with you on that. Like, I think that is freedom. That is what American freedom actually means, is like, you do you, I do me, and we're all good. As long as we're not hurting anybody else, mm-hmm. we're not impinging on the rights of other people. That's it. And I think we've gotten away from that, right? With these type of protesters, with the laws that we're seeing in the state of Florida that are saying, oh no, my moral ground is better than yours. Right. And that's where the problem comes in. Mm-hmm. And personally, I think that the role of the government is to not make those decisions that will affect the freedom of other people. That's why fundamentally I'm also in the pro-choice camp, right? Because that's, and I explained this to my class. Actually, by the way, both of my classes in FGCU, we got in the abortion discussion, but on the bequest of the students. So it was like really interesting last couple of weeks with the young people too, kind of going through the Alabama decision and stuff too. But I even told them, I said, look, you know, although I'm not practicing right now, I grew up a Catholic. My personal belief is like, I can't really imagine a circumstance where I would choose that for myself, chose mm-hmm. abortion for myself. But that's me, right? Like, and that was a choice that I can make for myself. Now, I understand enough about the science and other people's lives to know that it's none of my damn business what other people decide to do with their body and their reproductive health care. It's none of my, it's not my business, right? Okay. And I can have all the opinions I want, but my ultimately, I want the government to be in that position where they're not obstructing people from pursuing their freedom of health, not based on what I believe, right? Right. And that's where I think that whole discussion has gone awry as well.
I agree. I agree 100% because I feel the same way you do. I could not, and I'm a lesbian woman, but still I could not see any scenario where I would personally make that choice. But I don't know that since I've not been in that predicament. So it's, I don't like to make those kind of infinitive and definite statements when I don't know. And also just that, you know, I don't have to live with that decision either. So I think that government needs to stay out, especially when we have, like you said, medical evidence to support the necessity sometimes of this medical procedure, right? Because we forget that that's what that is. It's a medical procedure that is required far more than just in instances when someone decides not to be pregnant. That's not the only time that that procedure is done. So I think that that's true. And I think that when we talk about this, you know, rollback of freedoms, I think it's also a rollback of community because we are a liberal country, right? Liberal and not in the big D sense, but liberal as in right to property and, you know, self-determination. I think that sometimes we get pulled away from this idea that despite our differences, you know, what is the Latin term? Together we are stronger. So we have let these differences that we do have draw such a huge wedge between us that we forget that we should be united despite them and stronger in spite of them. So I think that we have moved away from that way of thinking as well. And not that it was ever really that great, hence racial segregation. I mean, white people like to claim that we were all so united at one point, but you know, if you're a minority, you know that that's never really been the case. But I think that based on our documents, we should aspire to be those things that we've said that we are, right?
Right.
And I think that there has been a time where we were more inclined to care about our neighbor than we are today.
Maybe. But also, like, we didn't have as it was a different level of polarization right now. And actually, I was getting, like, the thing that came to my mind when you said that, I was like, yeah, but we got Florida Republican senators who are still up in Tallahassee saying that slavery wasn't that bad. Like, it was cool. They, you know, not like they got skills and stuff and it was better than Africa. Right. That's what the folks and some of the folks are saying. But anyway, there's one more thing. I know we're coming, like we're going a little bit, we're going long here, but it's okay. We got a lot. We can do whatever we want here. Right. That's what's great about the Juice. But one thing I did want to say is that we had you know, Sarah put the comments out. She's like, what do we want to hear? And I know that I reposted that on the Big Mouth Media channel. And we did get one respondent, one person who at least that I saw before we went to air here. They want to talk about the Erin Bushnell case. Okay. And for those of you that are not familiar with that, he is the military man who last week set himself on fire outside of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. in protest of the incursion into Gaza and the killing of Palestinians. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. We have like not so much talking about Palestine here because a lot of times we're talking about local stuff and this is very right. much an international issue. But I think that it's really this is really getting people in a lot of different emotional places, right? Mm-hmm. It's a horrific thing. We're looking at over 30,000 people have been killed in Palestine. We still have not seen the return of all of the hostages that were taken on October 7th. And there was an attack on Israel from Hamas that killed over 1,000 people on October 7th. And that has been used to justify essentially this complete destruction and occupation of the Gaza Strip, which is this small piece of land and the like western part of Israel. And they've pushed all of the folks to the south. And now they're attacking that part in the south and the Rafah border near Egypt. Okay. So there's been a lack of humanitarian aid coming in. There's been discussions on the United States and their role, the United States providing military support. Mm-hmm. Funding for that is still kind of tied up with our dysfunctional Congress for the good or the bad of it. The United States just yesterday did a humanitarian aid drop over the northern part of Gaza. So they were dropping food down to folks. We did see what has been dubbed the Flower Massacre. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? Where over 700 people had been killed, or 700 people injured and 100 people killed, sorry, as they rushed the aid trucks. Finally, aid trucks were let into the southern part of Gaza, and it caused kind of a riot, and the Israeli troops opened fire on the people looking for the aid. So we have a lot of really horrific things. It's split politically, the way that people are responding to it here in the United States. We see young people of color really falling on the side of being pro-Palestine. You have older folks who are Democrats who are very pro-Israel. We have the Republicans who are generally pro-Israel as well. Russia's playing both sides. So in case you were wondering where they fit into all this mix, they're playing both sides and watching the United States tear itself apart. And it is something that is threatening a potential Biden reelection politically. So I'm just laying that out in case anybody's not been super up on that, but leading up to this Erin Bushnell self-immolation. So let me toss it over to you then, Sarah. So where are you looking at all this?
I don't even know what to say. It's astonishing to me that everything that has been done since the Holocaust and all of the precautions, right, that the global community has taken, and here we are. I find it difficult not to call this a genocide, to be honest. I find it difficult not to point the fingers at the world superpowers for allowing this to go on since pre-World War II, post-World War II. I have a hard time saying pro-Palestine, pro-Israel, right? Because I'm pro-humanity. I don't want people to die on either side of this border. Yeah. And especially because they have no control, right? This is governments and leaders making these calls while innocent bystanders, innocent civilians on both sides of the border are being killed to a much greater extent now, of course, on the Palestinian side. So at this point, although I do want to take that historical account rather than just say today this is what is happening, because a long progression of events has led here. And I don't want to not acknowledge that. However, I think it's time we stop doing the tit for tat, who does this, who does that, and let's figure out a real solution and let's stop funding it to the United States, you know, because we have in so many ways created this monster of Israel right now, and I'm not talking about the Israeli people, of course, I'm talking about the Israeli government. And we have, because we've taken such a side, we've been so clear about our position as partners with Israel, that we have created so much instability, not just there, but in the entire region. So, you know, our issues with Iran, I mean, it goes throughout that entire region, us defending and funding Israel the way that we do. So I'm looking at the whole global situation when I look at it, and I don't talk much about it publicly because it is so complicated. It's so complex when you talk about human beings that are being hurt by these statements. And I don't want to cause any more hurt to people that are already being hurt on both sides. So I do stay quiet about it. And I know that sounds weird for an activist, but like you said before, some fights are ours and some aren't. And so I think that this is better addressed with, I don't really know how it's addressed, honestly. I don't even know if we spoke enough about it that anything would even be done, because this relationship between Israel and the United States is so unbreakable. So for me, I'd rather just avoid the hurtful comments than, because I don't see that they're really going to make much of a difference. So that's where I stand. It's awful. I wish the global community would do more. And I don't have any.
Let me poke on that one for a minute, because here's where my big disappointment is, and understanding my background in international relations and being very supportive of the international institutions like the United Nations.
Right.
Twice now, the United States has vetoed, coming out of the U.S. UN Security Council, a ceasefire declaration. And they were the only ones to vote against it in the last vote. Britain abstained from the vote, but the United States was the only one to veto the ceasefire in Palestine, coming down from the United Nations. That really disappoints me, because I really do believe the United States could and should take a broader role in promoting democracy around the world. And this is really kind of flying in the face of that. So that makes me extremely disappointed. I'm also very disappointed in the leadership's overall kind of ambivalence to this. I mean, sending aid in is good. Mm-hmm. Funding the military support, bad. And there's a lot of
perspective.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of critiques that say, actually, because of the strength of the relationship between the United States and Israel, if the United States really point blank said to Netanyahu, "You need to stop," they would have no choice but to stop. Right. And so there are people that are saying, "Look, if the United States really would flex that might, things would be different." But I share the same concerns as you in terms of the regional instability and bringing in Iran, and how this could actually lead to something broader. Mm-hmm. It does have a long historical context, but we've allowed a far right government, because for as like far right as Netanyahu is, the reason he is in charge right now is because he actually formed a coalition government with an even further right Israeli nationalist group that was pushing the settlements. The settlements go through. And my computer is really telling me it's about time to go, but they're pushing the settlements, and like, that's what has led us to this. And it's this push within the Israeli government that has gotten us this, basically this genocide. So, because I do think we're going to wrap it up here, because my computer's going to die tomorrow. But I did want to say about Aaron Bushnell in particular, I admire him standing up. I admire his bravery. Self-immolation has historically been this really dramatic thing used to specifically protest really horrific things in the world. My thoughts go out to his family and friends, and my thoughts go out to the folks in Palestine and their friends and family around the world who are suffering this horrific genocide. And I'm hoping that we can continue to use the diplomatic resources that we have to solve it. And I really want the United States to come to the plate on that.
Same. And I would like to see some UN reform coming out of this. And that's why I say I'm somewhat hopeless, because until we start changing these institutions where certain people don't get to call all the shots, United States being one, we are where we are.
Absolutely.
And how can we expect the United States to promote democracy outside of our borders when we can't keep it together here? So,
yes. All right. So we'll land the erosion of American democracy in a future episode.
And we have more to talk about. I have Chris Jordan updates. I have updates on HB 601, but we'll get to that next time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. Appreciate you, and shout out to our friend Chantel Rhodes, who hopefully will be back with us very shortly. Appreciate all of you who've joined us here live and who will be watching and listening to us after this has been recorded and out into the world. We would love to have your support this episode. $4.99 a month, $19.99 a month for all the episodes. Subscribe on the plans and pricing page at bigmouthmediafl.com. I've been your co-host, Dr. Cindy Banier, and this has been Juice Fresh Talk. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.